This week on the Special Ed Strategist.
So I'm Jenny Durefsky, as you shared, I'm the executive head of school at the Siena School. At Siena, we prepare bright, college-bound students with language-based learning differences, such as dyslexia, to become confident, curious learners. And we really want to make sure that they understand their personal strengths and that they gain the tools and strategies to excel. You know, this is where providing concrete examples to support your concerns when you're going to speak to your teacher can be really important. And this is where your understanding of brain development can really come in. But they do need to know how to problem solve when they encounter difficulties. And that could be simple things like deep breathing or mindfulness, problem solving. What are the steps that you do when you encounter a problem? Who do you seek help from? But also really emphasizing again, those strengths, those interests. What are the enjoyable activities? What are the hobbies? What's the physical exercise that the children are getting that can counter that stress and anxiety?
Today's episode is brought to you by Learning Essentials and our Cracking the Code to Special Education Eligibility course. Empower your advocacy, erase confusion, and unlock the services your kiddo deserves. Learn more at learningessentialsedu.com. Hello, and welcome to the Special Ed Strategist podcast. I am your host, Wendy Taylor, and today we are welcoming Dr. Jilly Durefsky, Executive Head of the Siena School and a leader in supporting students with language-based learning disabilities. And we're going to explore some brain-based strategies to help parents unlock their kiddos' learning potential while fostering that confidence, resilience, and love of learning. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me today.
Oh, you bet. Before we get our conversation started, I always ask my guest, first, I'll have you introduce yourself, a little bit about who you are, but also I would love one little nugget of something about you that doesn't necessarily align with what you do with the Siena School. It could be a hobby, something in the past that you did that people may not know about you.
Sure. That's fun. So I'm Jilly Durefsky. As you shared, I'm the executive head of school at the Siena School. At Siena, we prepare bright, college-bound students with language-based learning differences, such as dyslexia, to become confident, curious learners. And we really want to make sure that they understand their personal strengths and that they gain the tools and strategies to excel. So we work with students in grades 3 through 12. And we have campuses in Oakton, Northern Virginia, and Silver Spring, Maryland. But I think most importantly, I'm mum to two high school students who are dyslexic, and my husband is also diagnosed with dyslexia. So I certainly have both personal and professional experiences to draw upon. A little nugget about myself. I know it doesn't quite, are you looking for something a little different? But I think the thing is, I never actually intended to fall into this as a career. I've certainly followed the path of things as it's come up. I worked in a school with students who were going to the Ivy League equivalents in England and noticing that people needed a lot of help. And so that was really my first path to dyslexia, despite the fact that I was married to someone who had dyslexia. And then if I look back upon all my experiences, I think my love of the performing arts that I've had since I was a child has really been able to help me immerse in the multi-sensory learning strategies that I've really learned are so valuable to work with our students.
I love that. Can we set the stage by you just giving a little bit of information about language-based learning disabilities? What does that mean when we say that?
So language-based learning differences really focus on anything that has the grounding in language. So, you know, for our brains were actually never really designed to learn to read. We have become a text-based society, and language impacts everything that we do. So whether it's reading, writing, spelling, math, and language-based learning differences for our students, they may process language in a different way to neurotypical students. And so they really need the multi-sensory structured intervention to ensure that they are developing the neural pathways that they need to be able to engage with language effectively throughout their experiences every day.
What do you think parents would be helpful for them to know about the brain processing language and how it relates to language-based learning differences?
Yeah, so as I briefly mentioned, you know, the brain processes language through complex neural pathways. And in individuals with language-based learning difficulties, these pathways may function a little differently to those who are neurotypical. And that can lead to inefficiencies in processing and using language. So we see this manifesting in difficulties with reading, writing, spelling, speaking, organization, and even math. And it's despite our children having average to above average intelligence. So essentially, the brain is struggling to efficiently decode and integrate language information. And of course, as I mentioned, you know, the focus of school, what is that? It's language. We focus constantly on reading and writing. So having language-based learning differences really impacts a student's academic experience. But as I previously mentioned, it was actually Dr. Marianne Wolfe who talked about the fact that human brains were never meant to process the reading of text in the way that we do today. And I often tell my students that if society evaluated success in a different way, such as painting or artistic ability, I would certainly need to have some kind of specialized education to tap into those skills. But it is society that values the written word. So I really think it's important that parents understand that, first of all, this is a difficulty that presents itself very much primarily through the academics, but that the right intervention can make the difference because our brain is plastic. There's a lot of neuroplasticity, and we have the ability to change and reorganize its neural networks or how it functions. So specialized education and instruction can really help leverage the brain's natural ability to rewire itself. So they parents who are listening to this may have heard the term structured literacy. They may have heard multisensory explicit instruction. And we're really fortunate in today's society to have tools and strategies such as assistive technology to help our students as well.
You've brought up the term multisensory learning, and then you just introduced structured literacy. Can you explain to parents what that means and what that can look like, either at school or in the community and home?
Absolutely. So multisensory instruction is really tapping into all of those senses. We want the students to be really kinesthetic. We want them to using sound and sight. So we use a lot of movement. So you may have heard the term manipulatives. And this is where students are really engaging in hands-on learning in the classroom. You know, even simple things, you know, by using like colored tiles to help students break down the words that they're reading can really help students see and feel concepts that are very abstract and can be very difficult for them. And then structured literacy is really an approach that teachers can use to have explicit and systematic instruction. So you want to be really clear in the way that you're explaining and modeling skills. You want to make sure that there's a very organized and logical plan. It's cumulative. We're continually diagnosing and assessing our students to ensure that they are gaining and progressing that cumulative instruction. And that it's, you know, a very supportive environment so that we are really using structured literacy to focus on a range of literacy skills, such as phonological awareness, phonics, decoding, spelling, reading comprehension, and written expression. And it's really an approach that all subject teachers can use in their classrooms.
So if parents are concerned about the progress of their kiddo, what are kind of the first steps that you would recommend for a parent to start? Because that's a lot of information. And how do they start seeking the first step of, you know, what is going on and what can I do to support my student and how do I advocate for my student?
It's a great question. And it can feel very, very overwhelming when you get this information and you're trying to work out best what to do. I mean, the first thing I'd say is actually tap into how you're feeling. It's really important to acknowledge as parents how we feel when our children receive a diagnosis and that we can develop our understanding of what the diagnosis means. And it's really important to understand that you're not alone. There are many families out there who are experiencing similarly to you. It may be not what you were planning and the trajectory or the path that you thought for your child. And it's important to really make sure that you are sitting and feeling comfortable with the fact that there is this potential change in your family that you weren't expecting. And then it's hard sometimes to find all those resources. I know when I was doing my doctoral research, that was one of the most complicated areas for families, was knowing where to go. So this is where educating yourself by using reliable sources that are out there already. So for example, the Siena School's website actually has curated resources already for families to go to. And one of my most treasured resources that I love to refer families to is the International Dyslexia Association. You know, it's really wonderful to have a one-stop shop of a place where you can gather a lot of information. So if your child is diagnosed with a language-based learning disability, really encourage you to go to the International Dyslexia Association website, where they provide a lot of resources about dyslexia, and they can ensure that you have the most reliable and the up-to-date information that you need, including how you can empower yourself to be able to advocate for your child in school. Because it can be very overwhelming with the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. You may have heard of 504 plans and IEPs, but understanding how you actually start that process can be challenging. So if you go somewhere like the International Dyslexia Association, or even your website, Wendy, I know you have a course that helps parents navigate this. You can go into reliable resources that are going to provide you with the information that's going to make you feel empowered. Also want to encourage parents to not feel like you have to do it all at once. You know, take one step, find a support group out there, a group of people you can talk to. Another wonderful thing about the International Dyslexia Association is that they have local branches throughout the United States, and they really want to foster the connections between families and professionals, as well as educators. So that really is a very helpful first place to go to when your child is diagnosed.
Yeah, and then you don't feel as alone or isolated as a parent, you know, just trying to navigate everything. And I think finding local support groups, and what excellent advice there to just say, you know, and it is very easy as a parent to just not know where to start and become overwhelmed, but just take one little step at a time to break it down for yourself as a parent, so that you can then ensure that you're getting the resources that would best support your kiddo. Before a diagnosis is even coming, before a parent seeks to find diagnosis or a diagnosis for their kiddo, what would you recommend in terms of, you know, brain development? And, you know, as a parent, you may just have kind of this gut feeling, but say you're in a public school and you're asking for help and they're saying no, they're fine. What is your suggestions on that for parents that are thinking something is not really aligning the way that it should be, and they're not sure, you know, where to start?
That's a really good question. And I would always encourage our parents to trust your instincts. It is, you know, very common, unfortunately, for our families to experience when they're first expressing concerns that they're told that they don't need to be worried. You know, this is where providing concrete examples to support your concerns when you're going to speak to your teacher can be really important. And this is where your understanding of brain development can really come in. Knowledge is power, and so anything you can do to educate yourself. But it can also support. So, for example, sometimes families are concerned when, you know, their 5 or 6 year old is still reversing letters, but that is developmentally typical. It's not until a child is continuing to reverse their letters past the age of 7 that often educators will then start to, you know, suggest that maybe there are some challenges there. So it can be very easy to compare your child to the children around you and in your community, how they're progressing, but understanding that every child is development is different, and development can span quite a wide process. So if you do have concerns, documenting those concerns, pulling examples together to go and speak to your child's educator in the school classroom is important. But if you are not receiving a satisfactory answer, there are other people within a school that you can go to, and you can ask to speak with, you know, the academic specialist, the learning specialist, whoever it may be in your child's school who you can go to next. If you're not satisfied with the answer you're receiving, I would really encourage parents to continue pushing in a respectful and partnering way, but know your rights, know the fact that you are considered a partner in your child's education. And if you are seeing challenges maybe at home, the educator can maybe provide supports for you, but you may also have key information to provide to the educator themselves about what you know to be successful for your child. So just really encourage you to partner and start with your child's main educator. But if you're not satisfied with that answer, make sure you're asking who else you can speak to. And just make sure you're documenting all of those conversations, because you want to make sure that you know who you've spoken to and when.
Yes, I say that all the time. Document, document, document. But it is important to understand what are your rights as a parent, how to ask for the help. So having that knowledge is definitely empowering, and for sure, listening to your gut, you know your baby best. So what are some early interventions that parents may be able to do to kind of help support a student that's struggling?
So in addition to, you know, working with the school and ensuring that there are early interventions occurring there, including, you know, requesting testing if you're seeing difficulties with your child, there are things that you also can do at home to really support your child's and their experiences. I would always encourage parents that when you're working at home, though, really try and build on those areas of strength and interest. You are not becoming the educator. And one of the things that are most stressful sometimes for parents is they suddenly have to wear all these different hats, and that can become very overwhelming in itself. So while you're advocating for your child in their academic environment, you know, find ways to reinforce skills at home. You know, for the younger child, maybe that's reading signs when you're out and about, reading labels on food cans, working with your child while you're cooking and baking with recipes and instructions. Really using real world context that you're naturally encountering can be helpful to reinforce those skills. And then reading aloud is so important with your child. You want to develop that love of stories and that love of storytelling. Books can become these scary things for kids when they have difficulty accessing them. Choosing a topic of interest and reading together, that can look differently at different ages. For the younger student, that might be sitting with them and actually reading with them and taking turns, or just talking about the pictures that are in the books and having a discussion through open-ended questions. Things like that are going to naturally build comprehension and vocabulary. But with an older student, maybe you're reading a book in parallel with them, and then you're having discussions about that book. But again, really following your child's topics of interest. You want to help them feel like they are the expert and they are sharing an interest with you. And then you're utilizing key strategies through books, visits, engaging in conversations. Maybe you're watching something on television that's about that topic, and you can engage in open-ended questions. With writing, you know, younger students can help write shopping lists and notes and thank you cards. With older children, if you are working at home and your job requires that you engage in writing or maybe writing projects, you know, show them how you draft and edit and maybe respond to feedback from your boss. Because we really want to help our children understand that what we are teaching them and all these skills are meaningful life skills. It's not just about school. It's not just about academics. So anytime you can model something, it really helps that real world context again. And this may be a little bit sidetracking, not quite what you're referring to, but I personally love scripting. Our children with their language processing difficulties can find sharing how they're thinking or they're feeling very difficult in the moment. So if your child talks to you about a particular situation that they're finding challenging, maybe it's talking to a friend about how to share a toy, or talking about when to get together, or take Thanksgiving that just happened, Thanksgiving dinner, where you have a lot of family around the table, can sometimes be a little overwhelming for our children as they're following those discussions. You know, they're having to process a lot of language. And we want to provide them with opportunities to build that resilience and that self-advocacy. So if you are developing scripts and practicing how to engage in those situations before the child is in them, you're really empowering them to be independent. So let's take that Thanksgiving dinner. Imagine all the family sitting around the table talking. They may not have the ability to engage in a conversation exactly as it happens, because as they process language, they formulated a contribution, the discussion has moved on. So a wonderful tool like scripting is giving them vocabulary about how they can then circle back and add their thoughts and really be able to participate. So really, I think for me, the message is that language-based learning disabilities is not just about school. It's not just about academics. Yes, that's obviously very important for our students, but it really impacts their daily life and their interactions. So really listening to when your child is expressing maybe they're having difficulties somewhere and talking through some strategies and practicing those strategies can really make them feel empowered.
1,000%, 1,000%, and just real world skills that are going to go beyond for sure. So how do you recommend to parents to explain to their kiddo whether saying they have a diagnosis or difficulties, how do you help parents kind of broach that subject with their student?
So again, I'd say it's very important for the parent to feel comfortable with that discussion. Something that I've noticed as a professional, probably over the last 5 years, is that at least independent evaluations have started to offer summaries specifically for the students, for the older students, and are willing to meet with them to explain their testing. I'd say if that's ever an opportunity for you, that can be really helpful for you as a parent to hear the professional explaining to your child what the testing means. And, you know, from my experience, a lot of children are just really relieved to find out that there is a reason why they may be having some difficulties and there's something that can be done about it. But it's really important to normalize for any age that their brains are just functioning a little differently to maybe their neurotypical peer in the classroom. But it's okay. And there's all these wonderful skills and talents and strengths that they have that they can do better than people who are neurotypical. And that we as the adults in their lives are going to provide opportunities to support them and help them. And that they have the capability through the resources that we're going to provide for them to be really successful. And that it's a team and you're working with them. There's nothing wrong with them. There's nothing that is a problem. It's just different. The way that they learn is a little different to maybe the way their friend learns. Although I have to say, multisensory instruction is really valuable for any child. And really, the way we teach our students with dyslexia could be valuable for anybody. But it is important that you as a parent feel comfortable because you don't want to inadvertently share your concerns or stresses to the child. We really want to couch it as positively as possible.
And that really goes back kind of with your initial comment in terms of understanding yourself and kind of processing all the information yourself so that then you can be that advocate, but then also be the guide for your kiddo and help them understand that journey for themselves, for sure. So how can parents then work effectively with schools and educators to kind of come up and create a system that's going to a strong support system for their kiddo?
So it really returns to this idea of partnership again. But I really want to encourage parents, you have rights. It can be really intimidating to walk into an educational environment and there's all these terms, 504 plans, IEPs, accommodations, and it can be really easy to be intimidated by this jargon. But you have the right to be there. You have the right to voice your concerns. And so partnering as positively as possible, but remaining firm. If you are disagreeing with the direction that they're suggesting for your child, try to get more information about why they are suggesting certain things and make sure you are there voicing your concerns or your support. So communication is absolutely key. You want to make sure that you are sharing information in a collaborative way. You're having regular check-ins with your child's educator so that you can problem solve together. And I really encourage you, I think it's going to seem like I'm a bit of a broken record, but really promote your child's strengths as well as their areas of challenge. Because when you tap into a child's strengths, they can really fly. And, you know, there's something that Sienna, we take very seriously. We provide a lot of choice embedded within our instruction, so that each child can draw upon their strengths as they're engaging in areas that may be more challenging. So really helping your child's educator understand them, share with them what works at home, and make sure you're also listening to the advice they're providing. You know, it may be how you could set up a successful workspace at home if your child has homework and they're older. How can you be more structured at home and how that can support what's happening in school? And if you're really finding that you're having challenges with your voice being heard, this is why I would encourage families to seek the help of a professional advocate. Many parents are very, very successful independently, but if you do find you need someone who has a bit more experience in that arena, there are people that can go for everything from just giving you advice and to actually attending meetings with you.
So I do a walk with Wendy on my social, where it's just this, like, I guess, conscious stream of thought. And I just did a post probably a week ago about what you're saying in terms of lead with the strengths, think about the strengths, because that's going to really develop more of a robust support system when it comes to supporting all kiddos. And the choice element, I think, is phenomenal across the board for all of our learning. And again, homeschool or community giving choices really can help in a lot of different ways. So how does stress, anxiety affect learners, especially for our children with language-based learning challenges?
Yeah, stress and anxiety is real, and it does create more of a cognitive load, which then impacts the ability to process language and focus. Also impacts your ability to engage with your working memory, so organizing your thoughts, following multi-step directions. So, I mean, it's very easy, I think, for all of us to relate. Like, if we think about a time when we're stressed and how it can really make it hard to think when we're feeling stressed about something. You know, and so stress and anxiety is something that's very important. Recent research is really showing the importance of social-emotional learning and addressing that early for our children and being tapped into that, because it can lead to lower self-esteem. Sometimes you'll see behavioral difficulties that are really due to that frustration. You know, so things that you can do at home, it's really important to develop a calm, structured environment. I'm using that word a lot about structure. It's really important to provide predictability and a sense of security for your children at home, because they're not then having to put energy into trying to figure out systems. If they know how something works, like, this is where I put my backpack, this is the order I get ready to go to bed, this is what's happening each day. I know it's very helpful for my family. Every single morning on the way to school, I'd explain to my children the flow of the day, what was happening, who was picking them up, reminding them what happened in the evening and their plans. Try to make things very predictable, answer any questions they have. You know, all these very simple strategies can really reduce the stress and anxiety for a child, so they can put that energy into their language processing. But also building resilience. You know, I talked about resilience a few times already. It's very natural to be concerned about your child, but we don't want them to be stressed out. But they do need to know how to problem solve when they encounter difficulties. And that could be simple things like deep breathing or mindfulness, problem solving. What are the steps that you do when you encounter a problem? Who do you seek help from? But also really emphasizing, again, those strengths, those interests. What are the enjoyable activities? What are the hobbies? What's the physical exercise that the children are getting that can counter that stress and anxiety? Because when they're in K-12 education, a lot of their day is academics, and it could be really hard for them. So again, tapping into those strengths and interests where they feel really good about themselves and where they are the expert can really help counter that stress.
What's some suggestions at home to create that structure while looking through the lens of a multisensory environment?
Great question. And I'm going to have to tap in a little bit to my own experiences as a parent here. My youngest always wanted to be really independent. So verbal reminders were a no-go in my house with my child. So we thought of different things. So for example, being ready in the morning, understanding all the things you have to do. Obviously, I'm talking about when she was younger, like brushing your teeth, brushing your hair, getting dressed, remembering socks. I don't know why remembering socks was always a challenge. But, you know, putting a written list was not going to work for her because she was still learning to read. But she loved the idea of taking photographs of her pretending to do these different things. And then we created a visual checklist for her that I put up and she could use every single morning independently. And it just really made her feel really good, empowered and successful. So we were finding ways to navigate the challenges that she had with reading a typical text list. So providing this structure, having somewhere where they are going to put their book bag at the end of the day, think about where they are going to go, even for simple things like reminders. If you have an older child and maybe your schedule is not quite overlapping with theirs and you're not going to actually directly see them straight after school, and you have a place to, you want to leave a note for them, information, you shouldn't be deciding where that note's going, because you may think you know where they're going to go look, but they may not actually go there. So including them in that process, if I have a note to leave for you, where would you like me to put it? You know, really working with your child to find out what's going to work best for them, because we have all these ideas, but it may not actually be the way that they are thinking and they are organizing their day. But so anything you can do, those visual checklists, when the student's older, it might be a written checklist. I know I have a checklist for the morning when my children go to school, make sure they have everything they need. And they now have a checklist for when they get home to make sure that they're unpacking things so you don't have those moldy sandwiches in your backpack. Think just simple things. We're not asking you to suddenly become an expert, but anything that's going to de-stress you and can make your children more independent is going to be very helpful in that way.
If a parent wants to seek outside support for their student that's struggling with language-based learning, what are some recommendations if they don't have access to the Siena School or a school as brilliant as the Siena School? What are some recommendations that you have for families to seek professional support in this area?
So again, I think going to somewhere like the International Dyslexia Association's website, they actually have a find a provider link, and you can click on there and you can put your location and who you're looking for, and they can connect you with a provider who they recognize has the expertise to support you. Again, even if you are not attending the Siena School, on our website are a list of resources and organizations that you can then contact to find out about the providers in your area. So, you know, you don't want to be spending hours searching everywhere. There are a lot of organizations out there that you can reach out to. And again, I would really recommend starting with the International Dyslexia Association, using that Find My Provider, but also finding out where your local branch is, reaching out to them. They can help you make connections as well.
How can parents help develop that confidence and self-esteem with their kiddos, especially when learning feels just really hard for them?
So it's really important to acknowledge how your child is feeling and not dismiss and brush it off. You know, being able to hear them, hear their concerns, validate their concerns is really important. As parents, we often try to jump into problem-solving mode. Sometimes our children just want to talk and vent. So it's really important to listen to them. So as we're empathizing, acknowledging, talking about ways that may be supportive, may help them. Again, this is different. You know, with younger student, you could maybe give two choices and see which one they prefer in terms of helping them with a certain area. As students get older, I'd really encourage you to bring in those positives. So, for example, in 2022, there was a study published by the University of Cambridge, and they discovered that people with developmental dyslexia have specific strengths that are related to exploring the unknown. So, in terms of our human development, adaptation and survival of our species, researchers believe that dyslexics have had a key role in that. You know, I find our adolescents fascinated by that. They love that idea. So finding ways that you can share with them how successful they are. We have so many successful entrepreneurs. In fact, Time Magazine really highlighted how many entrepreneurs with dyslexia are successful out there. Connecting our children with mentors, people who can similar age, young college students who they can talk to outside of your family can be really helpful. But including them in the problem-solving process, helping them become advocates for their teachers at school, teaching them about accommodations once you know about it and once the school's providing them, make sure your child understands what the accommodations are and how to use them effectively. We make a lot of assumptions sometimes, and it's really important to be explicit with our children with dyslexia so that they really have the opportunity to gain information, feel empowered, and ask questions if they need support. So it really is going to vary depending on the age of the child.
And a great thing to start as young as possible because as they get older, the onus, especially if they're headed off to college, the onus is on the student to kind of self-advocate and request those accommodations. So really understanding who they are as a learner and then being able to understand what is most effective in supporting them to learn and then increasing their knowledge and then being able to then advocate in a way that they're able to access that support as well.
Absolutely. Self-advocacy is key. You know, as our children get older, they're going to have to be more independent. They're the ones who are going to be sharing this information. In fact, we encourage students who don't go to Siena, we talk to them about putting together a list of their strengths and areas they need help. And even if they have a 504 plan or an IEP in their public school, during that time when the teachers are in, a couple of days before school starts, go in, introduce yourself to your teachers, give them this little cheat sheet that you've put together about who you are, self-advocate. And we've had a lot of students come back to us and say that was a very successful tip for them as they got older.
What are some common questions that students have asked you or your peers and your colleagues about disabilities or differences?
So big question is why? Why me? Why am I experiencing this? So being able to actually show them the neuroscience research, obviously in an age-appropriate way, with our younger students, you know, you can use colored string to explain about neural pathways and how learning can help restructure those neural pathways. And for older students, you know, we've even pulled out MRIs and showed them pictures of brain studies so that they really understand what it means. And so the question about that, but then we always want to talk about what helps them and include them in that conversation, because becoming independent with those accommodations is really important. Helping them understand it's not cheating to use assistive technology, for example. I actually wrote a blog about this a couple of years ago. It's amazing how technology these days is really changing the environment for our kids. You know, how many of us talk to our smartphones and we do a text message verbally instead of actually typing it out? It's really changing in society. And so what are considered accommodations are actually becoming embedded within our day-to-day experiences. So helping our children understand that, understanding how they can be empowered, and then really tapping into their strengths again. What are they interested in? What are they really good at? How can they apply that to their lives? So you're really looking at everything from, as I said, why, to how we're now going to approach this and how we can help them be successful.
Kind of in that same vein, how do you recommend or suggest for parents that if they have a sibling that is struggling and with learning, and how can a parent kind of speak to the sibling that is more, I guess I'm just trying to figure out the question in terms of like supporting siblings when they see one sibling versus another and different scenarios?
That is such a great question. And it was one that actually I found fascinating again in my doctoral research. You know, stress amongst families is higher when there's a neurodiverse member of your household. And it can be very difficult for siblings who are neurotypical to understand what they're experiencing. So really very big into having open, honest conversations in an age-appropriate way, in age-appropriate vocabulary, but talking about how people have different needs, they learn differently, they do things differently, you know, giving examples for them that are really concrete and embedded. You know, if there's two parents in a household, maybe talking about how they're different and how they do different things and build upon different things. You're always trying to normalize. But again, listening, you know, the research does show that when you have a student with language-based learning differences, a lot of effort and time goes into supporting them. And neurotypical siblings can sometimes feel, you know, a little bit irked by that time and effort that they see going in if they don't really understand why it's needed. So trying to explain about the differences, making sure, again, that the children are being heard, siblings included. There are some fantastic opportunities to engage in simulations now, so that you can understand the experiences of someone with dyslexia. Really encourage families to attend those together, so that you really become educators and supportive as a group. But it's important to make sure that as parents, you are aware of the time that you're putting into your neurodiverse child, and make sure that you are not inadvertently maybe not providing as much time for your neurotypical child. Because even though they may academically not need you, as much as it seems, it doesn't mean they don't still want you to be involved, listening to them, hearing about their day, hearing about their successes. Conversely, we've often found it's very easy to compare, especially if your neurodiverse child is younger and you're seeing that they're not developing as quickly as maybe your neurotypical child was. And while we understand it, you know, maybe hard not to compare, it is important to understand that every child is different. And so trying to make sure that you're avoiding conversations that can be overheard by children when you're discussing things with your partner or someone on the phone, just to make sure, be aware of your environment so that, you know, the children are not feeling like these differences are negative in any way.
Your dissertation was on the development and implementation of online community of practice and support. How does this align with what we're talking about today?
So we have a lot of power as a community to share information. So really, one thing that we discovered is the financial challenges of having a child who is neurodiverse, trying to find those right resources. And if you can tap into a support network where people have already had some of those experiences and they can share with you what they've learned and where they have gone for information, that can be extremely helpful. In addition, even if someone is not ahead of your learning and they're experiencing the same as you, like maybe your children have just been diagnosed, it can be really helpful to share the emotions that go along with that. Talk about, you know, what that means for you as a household. Just having someone to be able to connect with and know that you're not alone, someone who can empathize and understand. I don't think you can undervalue that in any way. That emotional piece, your emotional concerns as an adult, are really important so that you are in the best place to be able to support your child.
And then what are some questions? I know you've provided some resources for parents to seek kind of research science-backed support in the area of reading and language-based learning differences. What are some questions that a parent could ask that they may not know to ask when they're trying to find a support for their child?
I think if you are speaking to someone who maybe has a broad range of resources available, being very explicit and detailed about what your child's areas of difficulties are, because if your child's having executive functioning difficulties, that may be different from someone who's having reading difficulties. Maybe your child can read fluently, but they can't actually understand anything that they're reading. You know, language-based learning differences present in so many different ways. And again, that's typical. So we don't want people to be worried about that. Really understanding what it is that your child is having difficulty with can help then find those avenues of resources for you. And again, you know, somewhere like the International Dyslexia Association can actually give you resources where you can connect on the phone with a live person to talk to them, which is so key today because so much is just online. Being able to actually talk to someone about what you as a family need can really be extremely helpful.
What about training, that particular training that a parent should look out for when it comes to, I mean, we mentioned executive function, but also reading intervention. Are there types of training that you suggest parents to ask for?
So there's lots of different training opportunities out there. First of all, even just simply, there's a lot of books that are out there that you can read that can help you understand. One of my favorite books is called The Dyslexic Advantage by Drs. Brock and Fournette Ide. And it really helps you understand about your child's strengths, but also potential areas of challenge. There's also a lot of resources online that provide you with free courses that you can go through. There is a global charity called Made by Dyslexia that is really right now trying to reshape how people perceive dyslexia. And not only are they working with educators, but they're also trying to help educate adults about dyslexia so that adults are supported in the workplace. And they actually have some courses on their website that you can engage with yourself to try and learn a little bit more about dyslexia. In addition to like the International Dyslexia Association, again, it has some fact sheets and other workshops around you. There's also local conferences, again, on these websites that you can go to personally. But you're also going to find that there may be some trainings and areas of interest for your educator, your child's educator, that you can then maybe suggest. But it's just really want to encourage you again to really think about what is it that you need? So what's going to help you? It can be, even though finding resources can be challenging, once you tap into them, it can be overwhelming how many there are, which is why, again, going to one or two resources like International Dyslexia Association, Made by Dyslexia, will then open those pathways to other resources and you can find the one that's right for you.
As we wind down our conversation today, what is one thing that I did not ask, that I didn't know enough to ask or should have asked?
So again, I think it's about thinking about that long-term success. So how can we help parents with the long-term success of their child? It is so easy as a parent to just focus on the here and now, you know, because if your child is struggling in school, that's such a big part of their life that's what we focus on. You know, are they going to be able to read? Are they going to be able to write? But we've already touched upon those soft skills the self-advocacy, the resilience, the executive functioning. And you really want to make sure that you're intentionally embedding opportunities in your family to build that self-advocacy. It's very easy to kind of swoop in as a parent and rescue your child from every situation. And no, you don't want your child to be stressed out, but they do need to learn how to be independent and how to problem solve. And they're going to feel so good about themselves when they learn that. But again, problem solving is very abstract. We have to teach those steps very explicitly. Talk about things, talk about how you are problem solving. So really thinking about that long-term success, really thinking about who they're going to be when they're adults, how can we tap into their interests so that we can really help them develop those areas of strength. I have yet to meet someone who goes into a career in an area that they find really difficult and uninteresting. So whether you have a neurotypical child or a neurodiverse child, it's important to develop those areas of strength so that we can find where they are going to be successful as adults. And self-advocacy, resilience, these are lifelong skills that they're going to be able to use in their careers, in their personal lives. And it's really going to set them up for success. And again, those are skills that we really embed at Ciena because they're so key and important.
To piggyback on that, I always, you know, talk about if you're looking at within the public school setting and a student that has an IEP, an individualized education program or plan, and the parent would put a parent input statement together during their reviews. And I think this is a great thing for all parents to do. And I know it's hectic and we're busy and, you know, we're trying to just stay afloat sometimes, but really thinking of that kind of big picture, little picture for our kiddos in terms of what supports do they need now in the immediate, what will that look like in 6 months, a year, 3 years, 5 years, and then prioritize that as well. Because oftentimes when we look at that little picture, it does seem overwhelming, but if we can prioritize what is the best and most support we can get right now, and then start to build out that capacity of our student, then we're really kind of, and obviously it's going to change, right? Their interests may change or where they're headed may change, but kind of just keeping that big picture, little picture flow of conversation with the student, with the professionals that are supporting that student, whether that's in the school day or outside in the community, so that everybody's on the same page. We're accessing resources the way that we need to. And if there are resources that we need to access in the future, and it may have a wait list or something of that nature or a financial tie to it, that we can start to plan as that family, as that adult supporting that student in that process.
Absolutely. And again, it's the opportunity to put in those strengths.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Exactly. So my final question, if you had a billboard for parents with one tip, what would it be and why?
Again, I know it's that broken record, but it's that you should focus on strengths as well as areas of challenge. You know, that really is absolutely crease. Celebrate those strengths, celebrate those small wins, celebrate things that may seem just like regular to you, but is a huge achievement for your child. It's really important to celebrate the strengths and recognize them and not just the challenges. You know, unfortunately, our society really is seeped in this deficit language. And so we do want to recognize that everybody has areas of strength and we're all seeking different pathways in life to utilize those strengths. So let's celebrate them. Let's see how we can tap into them. How can we use them to really build those academic skills? And, you know, again, the dyslexic advantage is a fantastic read to look into this a little bit, but really celebrate those strengths, not just the challenges.
Dr. Dorefsky, this is amazing and a really helpful conversation to lay the groundwork to empowering parents so that they can better empower their kiddos. So I appreciate your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to the Special Ed Strategist. Remember, the right support can make all the difference. As your dedicated Special Ed Strategist, I'm here to guide, collaborate, and empower your kiddos' success. Keep igniting potential one step at a time. Until next time, take care and keep strategizing. Today's episode is brought to you by Learning Essentials and our Cracking the Code to Special Education Eligibility course. Empower your advocacy, erase confusion, and unlock the services your kiddo deserves. Learn more at learningessentialsedu.com.